Good afternoon. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time's 1:33 by that clock. Then we have a disagreement with clocks in here, but we'll use the one I look at. Now, it's Wednesday, the 25th of February, 2026. With me this afternoon, Chair Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, Senator Hoffman is excused on other business, and myself, Stedman. We have one item on the agenda today, and we're going to have a presentation from the Office of Management and Budget dealing with the FY26 supplemental budget, which is the current fiscal year we're in that ends in end of June. And these are funding requests to make the budget whole for this current year. I'd like to go ahead and ask the director from the Office of Management and Budget to come forward. Ms. Lacey Sanders has been here many, many times, and we're going to walk through the request that the administration has to be able to operate the state. And with that, I'd like to remind the committee that we do have some white paper, I think it's the second page down in your binder, with the amendments, and we're going to walk through each one of those and have a discussion if there's any questions or concerns on any item or anything else within the supplemental while we have Ms. Sanders here. Ms. Sanders, if you can introduce yourself and tell us how we're going to pay our bills.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. As noted by the chairman, today I will be walking through the governor's supplemental budget request, as well as a comparison of how it relates to the House's version, HB 289, at the end of the presentation, as well as any questions related to the recently submitted supplemental items. So with that, I will get started with the presentation. Maybe. All right. Just for a frame of reference, the conversation today is really going to be surrounding this overall surplus deficit line that we have highlighted for FY 2026, which is the current fiscal year. This is the Office of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget's short fiscal summary. So this is reflective of only unrestricted general funds. And primarily, we're talking about that today to talk about, the supplemental need and the overall deficit that we are seeing related to fiscal year 2026 and where that revenue source would come from. At a high level, I'll just note that $467.6 million is a substantial amount for a supplemental. This is a very large number, and the following slides, we're going to walk through how this is broken down and what that means for each piece that we're breaking it down for the supplemental, and how that would be impacting the current year, and what it means to be able to respond to those supplemental items that are being requested on behalf of the governor. So just as a frame of reference, $467 million is the number that we are talking about, and I will go through some other numbers that have been floating around just as so that there's clarification on what the difference is between those numbers. So I'm just going to start at the top level, which is our revenue picture. So this is a slide on slide three that we have shared in previous presentations. It is speaking to the volatility that we face with oil revenues coming into the state of Alaska. Last spring in 2025, when the legislature was here and passed a budget that was enacted into law, signed by the governor, we had $68 a barrel for oil, and we had a surplus at that point. However, moving forward, fast forward to the fall revenue forecast, we did see the price of oil decline down to 65.48, which is a decrease of almost $200 million in revenue. The overall projected deficit at this point is $52 million in revenue. And what I will say is that this is subject to change. We will have an updated revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue coming us to us and to the legislature in approximately mid-March. The Department of Revenue is responsible for that revenue forecast and tracks the volatility and provides updated projections. So this portion of the deficit that we're proposing could change, and quite honestly, it could go either direction. We are fortunate recently to see the price of oil up in the $70 mark as of late, which is fantastic for the state's forecast. But we have also seen much further lower numbers when it comes to the projected $65 a barrel, as low as, you know, close to $60. And so that volatility is something that we are constantly focused on and trying to ensure that what we have in the appropriation bill for covering our costs is sufficient. And oftentimes you'll hear people talk about headroom, which is something that we'll talk about at the end slide with HB 289 and the headroom that was included in the budget to ensure that if there is a change in revenue and it decreases substantially, we can still meet our obligations as a state.
Okay. Next slide.
Okay, so we started with the $52 million revenue shortfall. The next group of requests that I'd like to cover are what we refer to as formula programs on slide four. There are statutes put into place that govern programs in the state that we refer to as formula-driven. They are a calculation, a formula that is set into statute. And for the two supplemental requests that we have this year, we have in the Department of Health an increase of $1.125 million associated with the senior benefits program. This program has eligibility requirements and has experienced increased utilization in the state, resulting in an increased need to ensure that the seniors that are eligible for this program receive the benefits through the remainder of the year. Without a supplemental to fill the what we're projecting needed for the remainder of the year, the end result would be ending those payments to seniors and not making that senior benefit payment. I do have Assistant Commissioner Pam Halloran here with me today if there are further questions about timing and how far into the year the current program is funded at. But in short, the overall need is $1.1 million to get through the remainder of the year. The second program that we have requests are ones that we provide updated projections on twice a year. The first projection for Medicaid comes in December to the legislature around the delivery of the budget for fiscal year 2027, so in mid-December. And then a second update is provided on Medicaid in the mid-February timeframe. The overall request associated with Medicaid and that formula distribution is $34.4 million of state funds and $361 million in the Federal Receipt Authority. The Medicaid program does comprehensive analysis on what that need is going to be based on actual utilization in the program. It is a projection that we watch very closely to ensure that we have sufficient level of revenue to meet the check payments throughout the fiscal year. Without a state general fund supplemental, the ending result would be that we would not be making our check rate payments to the providers for the services that have been rendered. In speaking with the Assistant Commissioner Pam Halloran earlier, it's approximately $14 million for each check rate. And so we would end check rates at the end of the fiscal year and not be reimbursing or making those obligations whole without this supplemental.
Right. Could you restate that?
So without this $34 million, the state would need to stop the payments and meeting our check rights to eligible recipients that have payments that are due to them for services rendered.
Okay. Then what happens?
Chair Stedman, the state would default on those payments, and we would have to catch up in the following fiscal year.
Okay. And if we don't catch up?
Chair Stedman, the result of this is, you know, deferring those payments to the next fiscal year, and then we are behind further in the following year because you're constantly trying to play catch up to meeting those obligations. And, you know, we do have a formula in place, we have a statute in place, and we should be meeting our obligations towards making those payments in the timely fashion.
Okay.
So the overall formula cost in the supplementals that have been presented to the legislature for this is a total of $35.6 million of that grand total that we're talking about. So moving on to slide five, continuing just to group things in categories, the next two items are what we refer to as fund capitalization. So depositing money from the state treasury into the disaster relief fund as well as the fire suppression fund. As you will see, the total of those two items is $40 million towards the disaster relief fund and $98.7 million towards the fire suppression fund for a grand total of $138.7 million just in those two items. For the disaster relief fund, the $40 million appropriation is for a few things. It is to address the West Coast storm or the Halong disaster that was experienced in October. The Department of Military and Veteran Affairs manages the Disaster Relief Fund, and this estimate incorporates essentially at a very high level estimate, $150 million with the state's portion being at the 90-10 ratio that has been requested of FEMA. In addition to that, we also have other disasters that have been experienced in the state. We are currently what we're referring to as temporarily borrowing from existing capital appropriations to ensure that we can meet our needs and that the department can be responsive to disasters that are occurring in the state. As we have bills that are needing to be paid, we are, you know, obligated to make those payments from the Disaster Relief Fund. So a portion of this $40 million is to repay the short-term borrowing that we are temporarily using, and that is from a Department of Environmental Conservation capital project. It's a Village Safe Water project. And so we would repay that $10 million to that capital project once the $40 million is provided. So in addition to that, we also are working closely with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs to ensure that we have funds to respond to any future disasters that may come between now and the end of the fiscal year. We have been experiencing about a disaster a month, and hopefully we will not see any. That is the hope, but reality has been we are facing an increased number of disasters and increased costs associated with those disasters. For the fire suppression fund, there are a couple things just that I'll note with the fire suppression. There were two fire declarations, one for $20 million, one for $25 million, that were transmitted to the legislature during the interim to meet existing bills that were due and ensure that there was cash available to respond to to fires that had occurred previously. So the Department of Natural Resource works very closely with those that we have agreements in place with And as we receive requests for reimbursement, we need to make sure we're meeting our obligations for responding to those fires. In addition to that, we have requested a $43.7 million supplemental, and that is to continue to ensure that our obligations are met for prior year fires, but as well to be prepared for the upcoming spring fire season that will be starting here April or May.
Okay, and let's stop there because there was a question by Senator Keel, and then we'll go on to statewide items rather than do the whole slide. It's a kind of a break there. Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Director, thank you for this presentation. Can you give us the executive branch's best guess on where these two supplementals, total the disaster relief fund and the total amount for fire suppression, where they leave us on when we start the fiscal year on July 1? Are we break even? Do we have $1 million in the bank? Do we have a cushion? I understand the spring fire season is not yet predictable, but best ballpark?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm high level going off my memory here. For the disaster relief fund portion, maybe $4 to $6 million between now and the end of the year if there were no disasters to occur moving forward. And I can follow up with the committee if that's a high estimate, I think that's about accurate. For fire suppression, it's about $7 to $8 million, $7.5 million that we budget for the spring from that April through June time period. Again, not knowing what the spring fire season may look like, that is an estimate for there. One thing I will note is that the legislature moved to the fire suppression fund not too many years ago, and the intention of this was that not only do we have bills that we are paying out for obligations to other entities that we have agreements with, but they are also making payments to us, and the federal government is also reimbursing us for funding. So the hope is that over the next few years, we'll start to see the fire suppression fund stabilize as we have revenues coming into the fund from reimbursements, as well as the stable deposits that are being made into the fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you help us a little bit with the disaster relief? Is there any risk that the federal government would change that 90-10 to 20-80 or 30-70 or some other number?
Thank you for that question, Chair Stedman. Yes. So the standard for reimbursement of disasters is a 25-75 split. The administration has appealed to FEMA to try and receive a 90-10 split. That is still under consideration, and we have not received a response back at this time. If the appeal is denied and we are back to the 75-25 split, the increase that would be needed from the disaster relief fund would increase. And that is one of the items that has been addressed in HB 289 by the House, is that they have put a backstop or a contingency in for $35 million in the event that the FEMA denies the appeal for the 90-10 split. What I will say is, just in my conversations with Director Fisher, the estimate that we're using of $150 million really is an estimate based on the experience that we had or the state had with Murbach and that disaster. The cost for this specific disaster, Halong, is truly unknown and an estimate at this time. We may be back in the future talking with this committee about what we're actually experiencing in costs associated with, for example, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and all of the work that they're doing to get the community set back up and in a place where residents can return home.
Okay, so we have two risk levels here, what I'm hearing you say. One is the match might change from 90-10 to 75-25. and the aggregate number for total exposure could be substantially higher than what's in front of us today.
Chair Sedman, that is correct, yes.
Okay. And we'll go on now to statewide items if there's no other questions on the disaster. Okay, statewide items, please.
So under statewide items, these are items we refer to that impact the entire state. So oftentimes we're talking about debt payments or retirement systems or fund transfers. The total request under the supplemental is $127 million. The first item that I'll note is a reduction of $2.5 million. The Department of Revenue has done an excellent job in working through the bonds and refunding them so that we see a savings to the state in our future debt payments. And so in fiscal year 2026, we have a savings of $2.5 million from that bond refunding. Additionally, we have submitted a request to recapitalize the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. As you all may recall, last session fiscal year 2025 budget, the shortfall in revenue resulted in an appropriation from the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund to fill the shortfall. The governor's proposed budget is asking to recapitalize the Alaska Higher Education Fund with the amount that was drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund.
Okay. Okay, we'll go on to the next page.
All right. The last piece of the operating side of the budget for supplementals is operational items. On slide six at the very, very bottom, we have the total of the items that we would consider operational expenditures, and that totals just over $44 million. I was going to walk through each of these items for the committee. I'm happy to take questions as we go through. In the Department of Administration, we have $3.3 million for contractor support for a public defender agency. This is, historically they have had a criminal case backlog that they have been working to address on an annual basis, and they hire an outside contractor to come in and assist with that support. That contractor is in place and doing work as we speak, and we do have a projected shortfall for them through this current fiscal year. We have utilized a multi-year appropriation historically to cover this contractor work as they work towards clearing that backlog. We propose this as a multi-year appropriation that would cover fiscal year 2026 and 2027 so that if there is any remaining funding available, we can utilize it in the next fiscal year as they continue to work on that clearing that backlog. In the Department of Corrections, we have three items, $20 million associated with operational needs for correctional facilities and inmate transportation. This is, there's two pieces to this. We have experienced rising costs in our institutions as well as costs associated with the overtime needs associated with correctional officers. And between those continuing rising costs and a reduction in the Department of Corrections budget in fiscal year 2026 of just over $13 million, we have a need of $20 million to get us through the fiscal year and ensure that we are paying our employees for the time that they are working. We also have a $1.1 million need for community residential center beds. This is a contract that we have in place and that we need to ensure that we are paying for those services that are provided by community residential centers. And then lastly, we have a need of $2.9 million, almost $3 million for healthcare operational needs. I spoke to this at length in our previous committee, but we have costs associated with both rising medical costs for the population that we serve in the institutions, but also for 24-hour care and ensuring that if there are medical needs associated with our inmates, we are providing them care 24/7. In the Department of Health, we have two items for the Division of Public Assistance. One is the eligibility systems and the contractual costs associated with operating those systems. We have historically had a multi-year appropriation that has been addressing the workload and capacity needs for the Division of Public Assistance to catch up and ensure that our constituents are receiving the benefits that they're eligible for. That multi-year appropriation is gone, and the department still has those contractual costs. They are still in place and needing to be paid before the end of the fiscal year. Additionally, we have $5.9 million associated with the Public Assistance Virtual Contact Center. This is the division's call center. This is a contract that is in place and, again, will need to be paid. Under the Department of Law, we have a request for $1 million for statehood defense. This is an ongoing appropriation that we have for the Department of Law's work towards statehood defense. We often propose this appropriation as a multi-year appropriation so that if there are contractual costs that cover multiple years, we can meet those costs. The department's existing appropriations are will be expended or are projected to be expended before the end of the fiscal year. And then lastly, an item that I talked about in an earlier committee, but I'll just bring it back up one more time, is under the Department of Public Safety. We have a $1.3 million request for the Village Public Safety Officer Program. The Department of Public Safety has seen great progress in retention of the VPSOs, and due to that retention, the cost of keeping an individual on and means that their costs rise. And so in order for the Department of Public Safety to fully fill 100% of those VPSO positions and ensure that the obligation, the costs associated with travel and equipment is met, we are requesting a supplemental for the remainder of the year as well as an increase for the next fiscal year.
So of this $44,053,300, is any of this FY27 money or is this all 26 money?
Chair Stedman, these are all requests associated with fiscal year 2026.
There seemed to be some confusion in the building on, you know, what's in this particular piece of legislation. So these are all the current fiscal year. And we are trying intentionally to keep FY27 in FY27, 26 and 26, and fund both 26 and 27 individually, reoccurring revenue to reoccurring expenditures. That's the goal. So just to remind those listening at home, we want to have a clean set of books on separation so we can keep track of growth in government or shrinkage in government or however you want to word it, but what our expenditures actually are. Go to slide 7.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we have a question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, on that topic, I heard you talk about the public advocate money for criminal case backlog, and you said that the goal was to expend that soon, but you wanted a multi-year in case some of that extends past. I see the Department of Law's request there is for 26 through 28. That multi-year would seem to extend pretty well past the end of the current fiscal year. Can you help us with what's intended there?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So for Department of Administration's item, they are working on a plan to get out of the backlog and no longer have that into the future. For the Department of Law, we expect that those statehood defense cases may go on into the future. 3 years versus 2 years, it was just there wasn't anything like real specific about that time frame compared to Department of Administration's. They're two separate items that were evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
Follow up. Yeah. Thanks. So the notion then is that this $1 million will be for existing cases, or will this be to file new ones?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I can follow up with the Department of Law, but they have existing cases that they are working right now. And I assume that it may also cost or address future cases as well if those come up and funds are available.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, I have some concerns about how the statehood defense money is being spent. I talked with the Attorney General designee about a case that the state signed on to that says Alaska courts are not the place for Alaska cases, that Uncle Sam should be the place where they're decided, and that's not statehood defense in my book. Maybe Alaska should not be the sovereign case was filed out of another pot of money, but I'm particularly concerned about this one.
I think Senator Hoffman, who's not here, was addressing that in last year's operating budget that he's in charge of and FY27's operating budget. So I think he has a similar concern and intends to deal with that in the budget cycle.
Thank you.
But we can ask him when he gets here. We have other questions on slide 6 before we go to slide 7. Slide 7.
Thank you. So slide 7 is the capital supplementals. This is our one and sole item that pertains to unrestricted general funds, which is the Department of Transportation's match for statewide transportation improvement plan, $70.2 million. And I know we have covered this item, but demonstrating the need for this item before the end of the fiscal year closes. $70 million is the amount that would be needed to cover that match requirement at the federal level.
We have questions on this match because it seems to be of heightened interest to the construction industry, to say the least.
Okay. Slide 8 is intended to provide a high-level summary of what we've talked through today. So I will start with the governor's supplementals. These are through February 18th and the packet that was submitted. We talked about the overall $52.1 million shortfall and then adding each of the items that I've talked through today, getting us down to our total of $467.7 million that's reflected on the original summary, the deficit need as proposed in the governor's bill. As a comparison, we have provided the House Bill 289 supplementals that get to a number of $489.9 million. There was some questions that OMB received about that difference, so I was going to walk through those today. And at a high level, we had a $2 million difference in formula programs. This is related to the recently submitted revised Medicaid projection. The number is a $2 million decrease. There was a $43 million increase related to the deposit in the fire suppression fund. Debt service, as I noted earlier, we had the submission of the bond refunding. That's $1.25 million. The governor's budget proposes the Higher Education Investment Fund transfer come from this the CBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. HB 289 proposes it to be a general fund transfer. They get to the same point. It recapitalizes the Higher Education Investment Fund. It's just coming from the general fund, and the backfill would come from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. There is $2.3 million associated with operational items that were recently submitted, one of those being the Department of Public Safety's VPSO program. And my brain is not remembering what the second one is. Just one second. I might have to come back to what the difference is. Oh, it's the $1 million for statehood defense. The House bill removes the $1 million for statehood defense. So that's the second item under this $2.2 million. And then, as we talked about earlier, the House version added contingency language for the Disaster Relief Fund in the case that there was a change from the 90-10 request of FEMA to the 25-75. And then, as I noted earlier in my conversation here at the table, the House included $30 million of headroom in the proposed bill, bringing the total to the 489, and we have a difference of about $22.3 million. So I'm happy to take questions. I know that's a lot of information to digest at one moment.
It would be helpful if you can explain headroom. Do we get in swelled heads and we need a building expansion, or what do we need here?
Chair Stedman, great question. As a budget terminology that we use here within a unique group of people that understand it. Headroom is in the event that oil prices drop or additional appropriations are needed in other bills as we work through the legislative session, we can add, or the legislature could add appropriations into another bill, and they would still be covered by the Constitutional Budget Reserve's three-quarter vote at that point in time. So it's just allowing for the administration to bring forward any other urgent requests that might come up between now and then, or to care for if there is a significant change in oil and we don't have sufficient revenue to cover the expenditures.
And $30 million is the cap, is that correct? You can't go over that?
Chair Stedman, yes, that is the cap in the current House Bill 289.
And if the Finance Committees don't agree with a particular request coming forward to access the $30 million, we can decline that?
Chair Stedman, that is the purview of the legislature. They can include an appropriation or not include an appropriation that is requested by the administration.
All right, so the only thing this does is alleviate a second three-quarter vote if there's a $5 million item or $10 million item. They'd have access to the money, but that doesn't mean they got approval of whatever they put on the table. So we have another crack at stopping it and or trimming it back. The disaster relief, what happens to that if there is no change in the disaster relief?
Chair Stedman, if the federal government came forward and said that the 90-10 split was acceptable and we received approval for that, the $35 million would not be transferred into the Disaster Relief Fund. It would remain in the CBR.
Okay. So those monies would not be expensed.
Correct.
And we have no control over what the administration in Washington is, FEMA is going to rule. Is that correct? They're going to do what they do and we have to pay the bill?
Chair Stedman, that is correct, yes.
Okay. Just for clarity. We have other questions on this slide. Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not this slide. It's back to number 7, the DOT match, right? And so we have a lot of really conflicting people coming and say, I know this affects a lot of our smaller construction companies. If you're a big construction company, you don't have to have the stability of knowing that these funds are there. But with some of our smaller ones are kind of like this, if we don't do this soon, is this going to put projects off another year and another year and another year later, which is going to end up costing us a lot more money? Every year we delay something costs us more money. So is this something that, from what I understand, we need to get this done right away, even though I believe Commissioner Anderson said we didn't have to. But I have concern of all these companies that are coming to say, hey, this does affect our season. You know, we do have short work seasons in Alaska. How important is this? Is this something that we should just get out of the way right here and done? Because there's just a lot of conflicting reports here, and I don't want to hold up our construction people. It's hard to keep employees, and if we're going to start losing employees, that affects what we're doing in this state. So help.
Through the chair, Senator Kronk, having an appropriation to meet the match is important, as far as, you know, there are varying levels of individuals that have businesses in the state, and Commissioner Anderson has spoken to having that, you know, assurance, right, that the appropriation is there and that they can move back. Whether that happens today or whether that happens in a month, that's up to the legislature on when that timing is going to occur. He has assured me that the projects will continue and they have a plan as long as they can get that money before July 1.
Okay. Senator Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know. I just think this is something we really should look at, because it's like I honestly don't want to see projects delayed another year just because we couldn't get this match out sooner than later. I mean, and it's a prerogative of obviously you guys running the Finance Committee, but I don't want to see more projects delayed a year. I think they've had pretty much 3 years of kind of unstable issues, you know, across our state with our construction seasons, and I don't think we need to prolong this pain for them. So just my suggestion.
Well, I would think that this particular appropriation is timely and should be met ASAP, just for the indigestion it creates and instability within the industry. But this request in the supplemental is from your office, is it not?
Chair Sedmit, yes. The governor has proposed this. He proposed it in the original December 11th budget that was submitted.
So we can assume if he proposes it, he wants it funded. We can assume that that's the... Otherwise, it wouldn't be there, I wouldn't think. But we have other questions, concerns? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Just wondering, with the bill in the House or the other body, there were various attempts to amend it. Were there any amendments that the administration was hoping would succeed, or are we really kind of basing on what's been constructed out of the governor's proposed supplementals?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, the appropriations that were requested in the supplemental budget by the governor are the items that he supports. I would not feel comfortable speaking to any amendments that were proposed by anyone in the body. That would be me speaking out of turn.
And I don't think we've added anything here.
Through the chair, Senator, to the chair, you correct. Aside from the disaster relief contingency and the headroom, the items that are proposed in this, in HB 289 are the governor's requested items.
Follow up, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Just to clarify, that's what I was asking for. Of the spending that's there, is there anything that the other body has gotten out on a limb with the additions, or is it pretty much, are we dealing with the essentials? There's not a lot of bells and whistles being added.
Thank you for that clarification through the chair. Correct. The items that are in the proposed HB 289 are the governor's items, with the exception of those two items that were added.
Just a point of clarity on the headroom that we didn't mention. In the event, it's a standard practice, by the way, to have headroom. And it's also preferred. In the event, at the end of the fiscal year in June, then the bills come due, and the accounting process doesn't get trued up until mid-August or sometime, because you got to get the bills in, you got to get them into the system. And then if we find out if we had no headroom and we're underwater $5 million or $10 million or $20 million, we have to have a special session. The legislature has to come back to Juneau, convene, and pass a minuscule appropriation bill because we have to have a balanced budget by the Constitution. So it's important that we have headroom, and the members in the legislature understand that mechanism, because it isn't a free-for-all and to spend the $30 million. Just in case anybody gets any ideas to spend $30 million. It just doesn't work that way. So, and that's why the earlier question was, do we have an opportunity to, even though the authorization to access the money has taken place, if there's that three-quarter vote, doesn't mean that the finance committees approve the request. We can still turn it down. So, we have a spreadsheet to go through, I think, too, but we have, I think, a question from Senator Keel.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was first going to agree with Senator Cronk on the timing of the match. I have no doubt the commissioners got a plan, but I think that plan relies on everything going right, and a couple of months provide opportunities to get work on the street, even if, and it's rare, but even if something doesn't go exactly right. The question I guess I had on the contingency and on the headroom to Director Sanders, are those things that you would say are desperately needed, welcome, over your dead body? What's the administration's take on those two items?
Well, let's not have any dead bodies. Let's not go that far in this process. No, might be despair, but no death.
Fair enough.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, as Senator Stedman mentioned, the headroom is something that we proposed as well in the original supplemental budget, so it's not uncommon for there to be headroom. And just from my perspective, it's helpful just due to the volatility of oil, right? We don't want to be in a situation where we don't have the revenue to cover the expenditures or the appropriations that have been made. And, you know, one thing I just want to comment, I meant to say it earlier, is, you know, a lot of the items that we've requested in the supplemental are big items, and as I've mentioned many times, they're obligations that we have. Our ability to react, it's already almost March 1st. That's a very short runway for us to come up with a variety of ways to react to shortfalls if we don't have the appropriations to meet the needs that we have, or we have a revenue shortfall. Because we didn't have headroom and revenue went sideways and decreased even further, it's a difficult position to be in, to come in and say what's not going to happen in an agency or who is not going to, you know, be paying a bill. That's a difficult spot to be in with a short time frame. Regarding the disaster relief fund and the contingency, it is something that has been on our conversations and on our mind in what does happen if the FEMA denies our appeal at the 90-10 split, and how do we respond to that. There are no concerns with that appropriation, and I just want to continue to reiterate in my conversations with Director Fisher that we really don't know what the total cost is going to be. We could be back here next year saying, wow, $150 million was just too short of an estimate. We're up to $250 million. I just don't know at this time.
Thank you.
Any other questions before we take a brief at ease to set up the next slides? Okay, we'll have a brief at ease. Okay, we'll come back on the record. We just have a couple brief items here in the spreadsheet that Ms. Sanders wants to walk through and make sure we have a thorough understanding of what's in front of the committee. Ms. Sanders.
Great. All right. Again, for the record, Lacey Sanders, Director for the Office of Management and Budget, and we do have a spreadsheet that has very tiny font in front of us, so apologies for those looking at the screen. I'll start at the top and just walk through the amendments that were submitted on February 18th to the supplemental budget. So on the line two, as I noted earlier in the presentation, the Department of Health, their Medicaid team, provided an updated projection based on utilization. That result for the current fiscal year was a small reduction of $2 million in state general funds, as well as a slight reduction in federal receipt authority for almost $59 million. Line three is one that I have spoken to as well, so I'll be brief, but this is the Department of Public Safety's Village Public Safety Officer Program, the request for $1.25 million to address filling the remaining VPSO positions that have been vacant. Last I checked, there were seven officers that were vacant that they had candidates to fill but needed to ensure that they had the funding to fill those positions. Moving down to line four, we have a new item. This is in the Department of Revenue's tax division and is actually not unrestricted general funds, but what we refer to as designated general funds. The Department of Revenue has a team within the tax division that we refer to as the Economic Research Group. This is the team that we rely on very heavily for not only our revenue projections, but also all of the modeling that we do in the state related to new revenues or what is occurring, and they also produce the revenue sources books. Over the last quite a while, what we have been experiencing is a substantial turnover rate in retention for this group of individuals. They are often, I would refer to them as being poached by other sources. They can get paid substantially more money not being in this classified group within the Department of Revenue. And so we have a very difficult time in retaining these individuals that have a wealth of knowledge and information that is a benefit to all of us, not only the administration, but the legislature as well, as they're the ones that bring before us the documents like the updated revenue projections and do a substantial amount of modeling for us. So in an attempt to retain those qualified individuals in the state, we're looking at transferring or establishing two positions and moving existing people into what we refer to as exempt roles. Those commercial analyst positions do get paid, bringing them up to market substantially more than what is currently in the budget. And then working with our Department of Administration to evaluate the salary associated with these individuals to ensure that we can retain them moving forward. Moving down the list, again, items 7 and 8 we've talked about briefly. This is the reduction associated with the interest for bond refunding. So there are two lines there. One is $11,000 and the other is $1.2 million reduction in our debt service payment. That is all of the items on page one, and there is one item on page two. This is line number 9 and is the fund capitalization for the fire suppression fund. This is the amendment that was proposed for $43 million. So combined with the earlier letters to the legislature during the interim that would bring us up to $98 million. I will note we do intend to submit a change record for the $55 million so that we have a record of it through the budget process. It is included in the legislation that we spoke about earlier, HB 289, for that total $98 million. So we'll make sure that we are in alignment with what has been submitted to the legislature.
So they're additive. That was another source of
Chair Stedman, correct. They are additive. $43 million plus the $55 million gets us to the $98
million. Okay. And are these amendments in the legislation that the House took action on?
Chair Stedman, thank you for that question. No, they have not been incorporated at this time. They are. They were submitted after the time period that they could get them in the bill.
Okay. So that piece of legislation will come to the finance table here right across. Then there'll be an amendment process, and we'll adopt, look at adopting these if there's committee support into that bill and shine it up a little bit, I guess, and then take it to the floor and try to get it over to the House fully funded. ASAP. We have any questions, concerns? Anybody want to slow track this? Seeing nobody wanting to slow track it, I think the Finance Committee will take swift and appropriate action when we get the legislation from the House. Any final comments?
Chair Stedman, nope. Thank you for the opportunity today. And again, always happy to help answer questions or provide clarity if there needs to be clarifications made.
And I think, Ms. Sanders, you are available to non-financial members in the Senate body if there's any questions, staff has any questions. I would encourage a conversation with the OMB director or her designee to answer any questions, and then they could bring those questions back to the full Finance Committee. This is not a closed secret process. So I think the more dialogue we have, the less less ability to have misunderstanding of what these items are, FY26 items versus FY27 or what have you, or items that aren't really needed compared to what is needed. So if we have any other comments, concerns, we'll wrap up today's work. Okay, thank you, Ms. Sanders, for coming in. I appreciate the slower pace going through the budget process, trying to minimize misunderstandings. So this concludes the meeting this afternoon. Our next meeting, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we're going to have public testimony. Public testimony will be on the operating, the capital, the mental health, and supplemental budgets. So they can call in, the public can call in on any of those four items. Tomorrow morning, as we've done in the past, we will have areas of the state open for a call-in. Tomorrow morning, we'll hear from Southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound. They're also in Alaska, by the way. I don't know why they put Alaska on here. We know Southeast is in Alaska. At least I know that. And Kodiak. And then we'll go on in the afternoon and continue on the process. The following day, I think, will be up north. So we'll see everybody at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're adjourned at 2:30 p.m. We're adjourned.